Vyakta artaha, whose purpose is manifested. Maneshi, such a great saintly person. Unmata, restless. Balavat, like a boy. Kavihi,
a great poet or orator.
Mukavat, like a dumb man. Atvanam, himself. Saha, he. Drishya, by example. Darshayet, should present. Rinam, to human society. Translation. Although a saintly person may not expose himself to the vision of human society, by his behavior his purpose is disclosed. To human society he should present himself like a restless child, and although he is the greatest thoughtful orator, he should present himself like a dumb man. So, purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami, Srila Prabhupada, Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. A great personality, very advanced in Krishna consciousness, may not expose himself by the signs of a sannyasi. To cover himself, he may live like a restless child or a dumb person, although he is the greatest orator or poet. So, avyakta lingo vyakyarto vyaktarto manashun matabhagat kavir mukavad atmanam drishya darshayan rinam. So, om gana timirandasha gananjana shilakaya chakshur unmilitam yena tasmai shi gurave namaha. So, here we're hearing described someone on a very high level of Krishna consciousness. This is sort of a controversial subject matter in the Krishna consciousness movement. You know, how should we dress? How should we act? Do we need to wear these dhotis to be Krishna conscious? And of course, I don't know if you all picked this verse so when you heard I was coming. Because everybody knows that I have something to do with something called Krishna West, and we'll address that in a few minutes. So it's really controversial. You know, do we need to dress like this? Are these spiritual clothes, or is it just something cultural, or can we dress any damn way we want? So this is a question that arises. However, in this particular case, we're seeing Prahlad Maharaj come in contact with this saintly person, Avadhuta. Avadhuta means like the wind. And this Avadhuta is on a very high level of Krishna consciousness. So the principles or the externals that apply for someone on a high level of Krishna consciousness do not necessarily apply for someone who is just a neophyte in Krishna consciousness. And I'll explain what I mean. Like when one first takes up Krishna consciousness, one actually needs an external manifestation that will remind him what he's doing. For example, when one joins the police department, generally you don't become what we call a plain policeman or policewoman or police person, just to be politically correct. You don't become dressed in plain clothes in the beginning. In the beginning, you're like a neophyte policeman, whatever that is. In other words, you dress in a police uniform with your badge and everything like that, and your little hat. Everywhere in the world, it's like that. And then after a while, when you advance to the stage by identifying yourself as a policeman or a policewoman, then you can dress anyway. And you can go undercover. Undercover means you do some operations, like sting operations and other operations, to try to capture the criminals. So it's the same thing in Krishna consciousness. In the beginning, if we are not born in a Krishna conscious family, which most of us were not born in Krishna conscious families, there may be some young people who were, We have a sense of identification that relates to our birth, our family, and what the Bhagavatam describes as fallible soldiers. Deha Pachakala Tradishu Admashanesha Sadmapi Tesham Pramata Niranam Prashanapi Napashati. Some of you may know this verse. That we have these fallible soldiers. Fallible soldiers means the things that we see connected with this body that we think are going to protect us or maintain us or just make us happy. So this is called upadis in the Vedic nomenclature. Upadi means designation. You know, I am white or black, a man or woman, or a certain nationality, or even a certain religion. That's called an upadi, or a certain age. And so the Vedic literatures teach us sarva upadi vinirmuktam. We have to become free from these external designations. So there is actually an external way to become free from external designations, which is interesting. This is the opposite tack that Krishna was, to Krishna was, not actually, which I'll talk about in a second. So external way means you put on a certain uniform, you know, there's a dhoti or a sari and all the other accoutrements that we utilize in the Krishna consciousness movement. And then you start to identify yourself as a devotee. So Krishna consciousness is a gradual process. It's not that you become an avaduta or a paramahamsa the first day you join the Hare Krishna movement. You know, I remember when I joined the Hare Krishna movement, it was many years ago before any of you were born, then I actually thought I was a paramahamsa the first day. That was my problem. That I read myself and the other brahmacharis. And actually, don't see many brahmacharis. Oh, there's one here. They're an extinct species, or soon to become extinct. So, myself and the other brahmacharis, we would read Krishna book, and then we'd read about the coward boys. And the coward boys, of course, they're the friends of Krishna. And we very much liked reading about the coward boys, and we thought, by reading about the coward boys, we developed a sense of identification with the coward boys, and we all felt we were coward boys. Somehow or other, we realized our eternal spiritual identities one day after joining the Hare Krishna movement. Pretty good. I don't think any of you were so advanced as I was 40-something years ago. So, of course, I'm speaking facetiously, jokingly. So, obviously, we had not realized our spiritual identities. That we are still attached to our material identities. We're still attached to our tongues. For breakfast, we would take halva with a sweet rice lake in it, and drink as the remnants, the glumjivan juice for a drink. So, I mean, obviously, we had some material attachments, and obviously, we didn't realize our spiritual identity. So at that point, it was necessary for us to make what we used to call a clean break from our previous identity. You know, put on a dhoti, and it was quite embarrassing when I first put on a dhoti and had to go out and distribute books. In those days, we didn't wear plain clothes when we distributed books, or Western clothes. I'm not going to say karmi clothes, because clothes don't make someone a karmi. Western clothes are not necessarily karmi clothes. Dhotis can sometimes be karmi clothes. There's plenty of karmis in India wear dhotis. So, anyway, so we went out in Sankirtana in dhotis, in a dhoti. And people were shocked to see us, and I was embarrassed. But still, it helped develop a sense of identification. You know, I was really attached to that sense of identification. So, as you progress in Krishna consciousness, then you internalize that. So you no longer need the external accoutrements. You know, you realize, I can dress in pants or whatever, and I still realize I'm a devotee. It's not that I put on pants and all of a sudden, you know, I'm in the movies, I'm going to the soccer games, I'm going to the discos at night. It doesn't happen like that. I'm still the same person no matter what I dress in. But in the beginning, you may not be the same person. And so there's Talking about sannyas here, there's probably comments in the previous verse about the different stages in sannyas, or the different signs that sannyasi has, like the danda. You notice I'm not carrying a danda. Anyway, or a kamandalu. I certainly am not carrying a kamandalu anymore. When I travel with a plastic jug of water, not a kamandalu. Because it's more practical. You know, you're in an airplane and you're holding a kamandalu like that in the airplane. Shakes and all the water gets over everybody. So it's not really that practical. So I use a plastic container to keep my water in. So just like in sannyas, there's different stages that help one identify with one's renunciation. Just like we said, the different stages that help one identify that one's a servant of Krishna or a policeman or something like that. So in sannyas, there's the Bahuda, Kutichak, Parvajapacharya, and Paramahamsa stages. And the first stage of sannyas is the Bhavadak stage. And that stage, one hasn't fully realized that they're detached. Actually, he hasn't even 10% realized there is sannyasa yet. Which is interesting. Because in that stage, traditionally, one would still be attached to being fed by one's family, especially by one's wife. You know, attached to the cooking of one's wife. So, therefore, in that stage, one would reside in the same village. You wouldn't go home to eat, obviously. I mean, sannyasis aren't supposed to go home and ask their wives, please, cook some prasadam, and the wife will say, Maharaj, okay, please at my obeisances. And, you know, obviously, that's a little counterproductive towards renunciation. When you go and your wife is still feeding you like that. But in the beginning, your wife still cooks for you, and she sends the food through your son. And your son delivers it, you're at the edge of the village, you can't go back to the home to see your wife, but at least you're eating what she's cooking. So, because you can't, when you first take sannyas, you can't figure out how you're going to eat. You know, it's one of the main anxieties. Just like we have in Krishna consciousness, the only legal sense gratification we have is eating. Everything else is against the law. You know, no intoxication, oh my God. No illicit sex, that's a big one. No gambling, that's all right. I don't have a problem with that one. I don't think many devotees have a problem with that one. And no meat eating, that's not a problem either. But still, you know, you take away all this stuff, so you got the tongue is so important, right? As we chant every morning during the prasadam prayer, the tongue is the most voracious and uncontrollable of all the senses. I was talking the other night about this, that just like if you see a dog, and the dog has a tail, of course most dogs have a tail, the dogs wag their tails when they're happy, and so, but you've never seen a tail wag the dog, have you? Have you ever seen a tail just stay there and the dog going back and forth? I don't think anyone's seen such a thing like that. So, but I've seen that with human beings. Human beings don't have tails, of course, but they have tongues. So the tongue wags us. You know, it's the one little tiny thing, just like the tail of the dog, and it's controlling us. Go here, eat that food, you know, would you like Chinese food tonight, Italian food, Indian food, a sweet? Wow, okay. And so, actually I remember the first day, but when I joined the Krishna Consciousness Movement, we were simply filling up time between prasadam times. You know, you go on Sankirtan, and that was your payment for prasadam. And you had three times a day, and that's what you look forward to. But, so people are very much controlled by the tongue. So the first stage of sannyas, that's recognized. You know, the person is going to be still attached to eating food from home. Just like before I took sannyas, I was thinking, wow, I could take all the mahaprasadam when I take sannyas. You know, because I was seeing, I took sannyas in 1978, so I saw some of the earlier sannyasis, that whenever there was a deity offering, you know, you hear the conch shell blow, boop, that meant it's time for prasadam. You know, nowadays when I hear a conch shell blow, I think it's time for arti. But in those days when we heard a conch shell blow, it meant prasadam was coming. So they would bring a big plate of mahaprasadam to the sannyasi. They don't do that anymore. That's all right, because I don't take heavy prasadam anymore. But so anyway, they bring a big plate, and I would be a young brahmachari watching these big plates go to the sannyasis, and I was thinking, wow, one day I want to be a sannyasi too. You know, that's one of the perks. You don't get many perks as a sannyasi. Of course, nowadays you get more perks. You get mobile phones and different things like that. But in the old days, the sannyasis were much more austere. We were real sannyasis. So anyway, there's that motivation in the beginning. So that's the Bahudak stage. One's concerned with the tongue. And then after that, you start to travel and you do the Madhukari. Madhukari means you're still concerned with how you're going to eat. So Madhukari means like a bee, a honeybee who goes to the different flowers to get a little honey. So you go to different people's houses. Go to one person's house and say, can I have a chapati? Next person's house, can I have a slice of pizza? And the next person's house, can I have pakoras, lasagna? And so this way you're enjoying life. It's like called the banquet circuit. I mean, that was... We used to call sannyasis like the banquet circuit. It's nice, isn't it? Even I come here to Australia, and I have one disciple, you know, real fanatic disciple. I won't mention her name, it's Kishori. So she brings out this plate. It's this big when I'm eating. You know, it's so embarrassing when I have guests at the same time. It's this big. It takes up the whole table. And everyone's thinking, you know, this guy is now renounced. He's just like, you know, I don't get you. So that's the second stage of sannyasa. Unfortunately, I think I've gone beyond that stage. So, and then the next stage is Parvajakacharya, where one just wanders everywhere, and basically, you know, you take prasadam whenever it's offered. And if you're a little hungry, you can ask for prasadam, but it's not such a big concern. Then the next stage after that is what's called Paramahansa. In Paramahansa, you don't even think about whether you're eating or not. You don't think about it, because you're so much absorbed in Krishna consciousness. It's described about the six Goswamis of Vrindavan, Nijahara, Vihara. They forgot that they slept, whether to sleep, but they forgot whether or not they ate. And sometimes they would go days without eating, because they were in so much ecstasy. Because a Paramahansa, which means topmost swan-like person, because a swan can take nectar even from a filthy place. What's that? So a Paramahansa, he's so much absorbed in his internal identity. You see him here in this world, but actually he's not in this world. He's with Krishna, you know, dancing with Krishna, or playing in the coward pastures with Krishna, or taking care of Krishna as a little child. And you're seeing him, but you don't really understand. That's why it says one cannot understand the mind of a pure devotee. You know, a Krishna Prema devotee, a Paramahamsa. So on that stage, and even in the higher stages of Parvajakacharya, then, you know, the external things are not that important. One can accept or not accept. But the reason for accepting or not accepting is very interesting, just like it's mentioned in this particular verse. His purpose is disclosed. Okay, so what's the purpose of acting like a restless child or a dumb person? I mean, that's an interesting point. There's other purposes, too, which I'm going to talk about in a second. But the purpose is so that one doesn't get entangled in this material world. Because someone who is a Paramahamsa is also still afraid of Maya. Prabhupada actually, of course, is on the highest platform of devotional service. And the devotees asked him, what are you praying for? And Prabhupada said, I'll stay out of Maya. And of course, Prabhupada was never in Mahamaya. He was always in Yogamaya, you know, the spiritual energy. So, but still, that's the quality of someone who's very advanced. They're afraid of forgetting Krishna. And the problem with us is we're not afraid of Maya. Like Prabhupada said, the problem with you Western boys and girls, because we were all boys and girls at that time. Now Prabhupada would be saying, the problem with you old Western people, so, is that you're not enough afraid of Maya. You know, Maya means illusion. It also means energy, but in this particular context, it means illusion. So, So the reason that a Paramahamsa will act like a dumb person is because he wants to remain Krishna conscious, several different reasons, or he doesn't want people to bother him. I mean, for example, or he's humble. Let's give an example from the case of the life of Gaur Kishoredas Babaji Maharaj. Gaur Kishoredas Babaji Maharaj was Babaji, completely Paramahamsa, etc. So Bhaktivinoda Thakur, at one particular time, wanted to take Babaji order from Gaur Kishoredas Babaji Maharaj. But Gaur Kishoredas Babaji Maharaj, being very humble, was thinking, you know, how can I give Babaji initiation to this great Vaishnava? So in order to not be confronted with that inevitable reality, he tried to hide from Bhaktivinoda Thakur. And the way he hid was quite interesting. He went to the house of a prostitute, and he sat down on her doorstep, and nobody would look for him there. So in other words, he did something that externally, like if you take, you know, sannyasi, he goes to, I guess, King's Cross or something like that in Sydney. And in America, we have this place called the French Quarter of New Orleans. You know, a place where there's really low-class people. Like, or let's say a bar. Let's say you would never look for me in a bar. You know, if I wanted to hide from all of you, I would actually go to a bar somewhere in King's Cross. No one would find me.
I'd find you.
What, you'd be there too, or what?
We have the collections of
Christmas. Oh, collections, yeah, yeah. Okay. So you would be shocked. So Parma would find me. Anyway, but the rest of you wouldn't know where to look. He would. So, because, and anyway, it would be something so weird externally that nobody, and so Gaur Kishoredas Babaji Maharaj did that to carry out a particular purpose. And you have many examples of this. For example, you have Jatavarta. Jatavarta, of course, his previous lives, he was Bhart Maharaj, two previous lives before then. He was Bhart Maharaj, and he made a big mistake. He wasn't enough afraid of Maya. And Maya came to him in the shape of a baby deer. And actually, one of the problems, just that has nothing to do with the topic, one of the reasons he succumbed to that particular attraction and became attached to the deer is because he wasn't in the association of devotees. So if we want to stay free from Maya, we got to stay in the association of devotees. I probably gave that example with sticks. You know, many sticks together can't be broken. One stick can be broken. So anyway, so he learned his lesson. You know, he became attached to a deer, yam yam bapis maran babam yashate yanti kalevram. And what happened? Then he became a baby deer. A doe, a deer, you know, whatever, that song. So he became a deer, and as that deer, he was a very renounced deer. You know, so he used to hang around the devotees and didn't have anything to do with the other deer. And he didn't get married as a deer. He made a brahmachari or brahmacharini deer. And then in his next life, he became the avaduta Jatavarta. And as Jatavarta, he acted completely stupid, just like described here. His father tried to teach him how to clean. He cleaned at the wrong time, you know, before going to the toilet, not after the going to the toilet. He couldn't put on his Brahmin thread properly. He was dirty. And that's so nobody would harass him. But it was discovered that he was so exalted when he had his discussion with Maharaj Rahugana, famous story, that he was carrying this palanquin of Maharaj Rahugana and that he didn't carry it properly because he was trying to avoid stepping on ants. And then Maharaj Rahugana tried to chastise him, and then he had this elaborate philosophical discussion with Maharaj Rahugana. So you can actually tell what someone is like by what they say, not what they look like. That's important. What they say, that's like Prabhupada gave the example from the Hitopadesh, that once upon a time, there was a jackal. I don't know if you have any jackals here, but anyway, jackal is like a wild dog before they bred dogs so we can have our best friends in society. Did you know that? You know, man's best friend is his dog. He's the only one who loves you. the only one wants to serve you. So the original dogs were wild dogs, and they bred them so they could become domesticated and carry your newspaper and choose it. So there was this jackal who was a wild dog, and somehow or other some paint spilled on, like blue paint spilled on, and he looked really nice, you know, effulgent. I guess it was like effulgent paint. So all the animals in the forest started to offer their obeisances. My dear jackal, please accept my humble obeisances. All glories to Prabhupada, you know, like that. And then they put him on the throne of the king. You know, the king is normally the lion king. So they put him on the throne, and they were worshiping him. But then it came time for the dusk. Dusk means the evening. And the jackals naturally started to howl. Anybody who's been in Mayapur has heard these jackals. And he started howling. And so by his speech, they discovered that's what he was, a jackal. And so then the lion, who had his position usurped, began to recite the prasadam prayers at this particular juncture. And the poor jackal became jackal prasad. Because animals are allowed to eat meat. Human beings shouldn't be eating meat. So, right. Lion, perfect food for a lion. So you can tell what someone is like by what they say, not necessarily what they look like. So, that's the really important thing. So, getting to the point I actually wanted to make in regard to this class, was that the purpose of sannyas, and that's mentioned in the previous verse, purpose of sannyas in the Krishna consciousness movement and in Kali Yuga is to preach Krishna consciousness. And the word sannyas basically means to accept and reject. Sannyas. Just like you have the word sankirtan. Most devotees pronounce it as sankirtan. That's the wrong pronunciation. Sankirtan. So in sankirtan, that means together. You know, accepting. Together you chant the holy names of the Lord. You know, congregationally or distribute books or something like that, congregationally. And so sannyas means to accept whatever is favorable for devotional service and reject what is not favorable for devotional service. And as far as the sannyasi's specific duty in regard to those parameters, that means to accept what's favorable for preaching and to reject what's unfavorable for preaching. And of course, in line with what Prabhupada said, you know, utility is the principle. Remember everybody said it? The Prabhupada said it? But also a sannyasi has to remember purity is the force. He can't just like say, well, let's just preach and forget about sadhana. Let's forget about chanting. Let's forget about offering food to Krishna. I'll give you a practical example. When I first started traveling with a sannyasi in 1973, the idea was that we could forget about all that stuff. You know, so we started buying all our food in the store rather than cooking it, buying bread cooked by rakshasas, Robin and his associates. So anyway, whatever it is, we started eating any damn thing, and our offering was just simply taking the bag of groceries and putting it to our head and saying, Sri Vishnu, Sri Vishnu, Sri Vishnu. That was our Pancharatriki Vidhi. Sri Vishnu, Sri Vishnu. And so we noticed our consciousness was, and we also started waking up at 8 o'clock in the morning, which is kind of nice, you know, because, you know, 4 o'clock we consider to be an ungodly hour. So then we noticed our consciousness was rapidly descending into the pits of hell. So then we decided, you know, to start cooking, even though we were traveling on the road, you know, rolling chapatis, even in a van, so we could have some prasadam cooked by devotees. So purity is the force. That's the point I'm getting. So it's not that you can just like all hell breaks loose in the name of preaching, and because you will find yourself fallen, and you'll find other devotees preaching to you, trying to bring you back to the Krishna conscious movement after some time. So purity is the force. However, utility is the principle. I mean, I don't know the other ones, books are the basis, but so therefore, you have to do what's necessary externally, and hopefully by that time, you've learned this sense of self-identification, so you don't get confused because you're wearing some different type of clothes. And you're able to bring people to the Krishna consciousness movement using that principle. Utility is the principle. Whatever is best to bring massive amounts of people, because Prabhupada's vision was that the whole world would be Krishna conscious. He wasn't satisfied with a few brahmacharis in the temple or a few devotees or whatever. He wanted everyone to become Krishna. In fact, the Bhagavatam states, Tadvad Visarga, Janataka Viplavo, Yasmin Pratishlokum, Bhadavatyupi, Nanmanan, Nanaman, Nanantasha, Yashovin, Nikatani Yatshin, Vandigayanti, Gunananti Yatsadavaha. That these words of the Bhagavatam, of Krishna conscious Siddhanta, is meant to create a revolution in the misdirected lives of an impious civilization. And even if things are done like a little mistakes here and there, that's Prabhupada would oftentimes quote that verse. That'll be the result, creating a revolution. We're a real revolutionary movement, not with guns and knives or any of that stupid stuff, but changing people's consciousness. And in order to do that, sometimes we have to be in like a pin, as Prabhupada said, and come out like a plow. That means dress in such a way that people will more readily accept us, or cook different types of prasadam that people are more accustomed to. I mean, like if you go out in Sankirtan, you start handing out club jamuns to people in the street. I mean, devotees used to do that. You know what a club jamun is? Everyone knows. And, you know, just like dripping like that. You just go, here, please stop. Here's a club jamun. Ooh, what's this? You know, so instead you give them a cookie. Even Prabhupada liked cookies. I mean, I was with Prabhupada one time, and I forgot to give the cookies out for a preaching engagement, and I apologized to Prabhupada, and Prabhupada said, oh, you can give me some of the cookies. And Prabhupada ate about 20 cookies. You know, I was shocked. I kept giving Prabhupada one cookie after another. So anyway, we don't want to be attached to certain external things. These external things are not necessarily Krishna consciousness. May help us remember Krishna. A uniform is necessary. Yes, I understand that. I'm wearing a dhoti here. I haven't come in my shorts to give Bhagavatam class. I'm not that controversial yet. So, but we feel so compassionate. Like Bhakti Sananta Saraswati Thakur said, we should be ready to give gallons of blood to make people Krishna conscious. There was a story, and I told the story in Brisbane, but it bears telling again, that once upon a time, Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur came to a temple, and his idea was to install the deities, Radha Krishna deities. So there's a big ceremony being prepared, the deities were being prepared. And then he noticed that there was one devotee who wasn't there. And this devotee was kind of a disturbance, crazy, you know, whatever. And the devotees just had it previously asked him to leave because he was creating a disturbance. So Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur said, where is this devotee? And the other devotees said, we had to ask him to leave. He was just like, wow, he's a real avaduta or something. And Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur said, I'm not going to install those deities. I'm leaving. Unless you bring that devotee back. You know, so much compassion for someone who we would just say, you know, hit the road, Jack. You know, that's not hit the road, Jack, and don't you come back. Anyway, so someone we would say that to, and he was ready just to give up this whole preaching program, deity installation, opening the temple, just because of that. So much compassion. So these are our role models. Srila Prabhupada, Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, these great acharyas, who are overcome with so much compassion that they were willing to do things that were non-traditional. Prabhupada certainly did a lot of things non-traditional. You know, Brahmacharini Ashram, giving us all sannyas and you know, Gayatri Mantra and all those other things. Certainly very non-traditional, crossing an ocean. Because Prabhupada was dedicated to the order of his spiritual master and dedicated to compassion, just like he was overwhelmed with compassion. I mean, if you read this one poem of Prabhupada's, and I ask you all to read it, it's called Vrindavan Bhajan, and it's one of my favorite poems. And you could hear about Prabhupada's compassion, other things too, like Prabhupada's renunciation, but Prabhupada's compassion, Prabhupada's emphasis on preaching, Krishna consciousness, and even criticizing those who thought that they shouldn't preach, that you just sit down and try to love Krishna without reaching out and trying to preach. So this is Prabhupada's mood, and this is the mood of, or should be the mood of the devotees in the Krishna consciousness movement. And that's why devotees can sometimes dress differently, do different programs, what they call bridge preaching programs. There's many different programs. Here in Australia, of course, you have Govinda's in Sydney, you have the program in Cronulla, different law programs in different places, and whatever, to make devotees. We have to bring more people to the Krishna consciousness movement. This temple room should be full. We should need to build a temple room 200 times bigger than this to accommodate the devotees. I mean, that should be our objective, the whole world. And we should have a temple in every corner, just like the churches. There's churches everywhere. You know, every 5-6 kilometers you'll find a church. So, you know, why not that for the Krishna consciousness movement? So we shouldn't rest until we come to that. And there's no question of retiring. You know, just like I'm 66 years old, so I don't think about retiring. You know, when are you going to go to Vrindavan Maharaj and just sit down and become a Babaji? You know, it's attractive, because then I wouldn't have to deal with any of the problems I have to deal with, especially disciples. So, you know, what do they say? Goodbye, cruel world. You know, there's always that temptation to do something like that. However, that's not Prabhupada's mood, and that would not please Prabhupada. And then we should have compassion. You know, people are suffering. So therefore, we have these programs, you know, bridge preaching programs, Krishna West, which I'm heading up, and we're quite successful in our Krishna West program. Within 6 months, we have 25 college students chanting japa mala. That's pretty successful, first 6 months. So, I guess I've gone over my time. So, any questions or comments? Yeah, Madhu?
Thank you, Maharaj, for that class. With the identification for those newer people, what strategies do you use in Krishna West? Because they may or may not have the 30s, they may not have the...
We have Krishna West t-shirts, which I wear on the walk tomorrow. Which I generally wear to the GBC meetings to aggravate everybody. The interesting thing about these new strategies for preaching Krishna consciousness is that in any society, and you know, ISKCON is a typical society in many ways, sociologically, you have conservatives and liberals. You understand? Just like in politics, you have conservative liberals. You have that here in Australia. So in ISKCON, we have very conservative people and liberals. And Prabhupada said we should talk about unity and diversity, respecting each other. It's not that we should go around criticizing. It's not that I should criticize liberal people or conservatives, and I'm a hyper-liberal. So we should appreciate everybody's endeavor to be Krishna conscious. So as far as methods of self-identification, here we have our neck beat. I mean, that's one thing. We do have some external signs that do not intrude on people's sensibilities, cultural sensibilities. And, you know, we can have a little light tilak or something like that. And maybe eventually we'll develop a certain type of tattoos. We can tattoo everybody or brand everybody. Actually, in the Madhva Sampradaya, I remember some, but not that particular branch, they brand people when they take initiation. Well, that we don't do that. But they put this iron rod in the fire. Anyone heard about this before? They put an iron rod in the fire with the symbols of Vishnu, and they said, roll up your sleeve, buddy. And they go,
Ouch.
They're testing to see if you're on the Brahma-Buddha platform. Because if you scream, you get initiated. So you actually, the symbol, you know, I think Mishinka Kavacha knows about this. And so we don't do that, but we have symbols on our body, you know, tilak and everything like that. And, you know, of course, I think eventually the seeker can become in fashion. So there's other methods like that. But, you know, in many cases, people will not adopt the dhoti. I mean, just like there's many people here are not wearing dhotis or saris or things like that. And when I interact with people in the programs, I generally wear Western clothes, too. in the beginning. And then after a while, you know, after they get to know you, because people join religious societies basically because of friendship. It's called social networking. This is a sociological phenomenon. Most people don't join because of philosophy. As much as we like to think that, oh, everybody's at such a high level of philosophy, you know, I joined because I was a yogi in my past life and I was looking for the absolute truth and I was living in the banks of the Jamuna and joined. No, but most people join because of friendship. Like, so you see, many people, they join and their friends also join at the same time. So you develop this network of friends, and that really keeps people in Krishna consciousness, which is nice. But so yeah, as we advance more in Krishna consciousness, we don't need so much the external, some of the external manifestations. Yeah.
Did you mention earlier one about Maharaj, one of the reasons he became attached to Deer because he wasn't associated with devotees?
Yeah.
But then we see when he appeared with Jagannath, he kept himself very aloof from everyone, so what's the difference?
Because there weren't many devotees around. His family was like Karmakanya Brahmanas. But as a deer, he did associate with devotees. So when you don't have devotees who associate, then you keep yourself alone for that particular point.
Surely he could have found devotees.
I don't know, you have to ask him. I don't know the situation. In many areas in India, there's just these Karmakandis or Shaktas or people like that. It's very hard to find a devotee sometimes. So I don't know the scenario. I do know that one of the reasons he did deviate, because if I had been with Bart Maharaj, when he was Bart Maharaj and meditating and got attached to the deer and was starting to kiss the deer instead of saying his Gayatri mantra, I would have said, hey Maharaj, snap out of it. You're in Maya. I mean, any one of us would have said that. Would you have said that, Mr. Maharaj? I mean, if you came to my house one day, and I had this little pet dog, not a deer, and I was just petting him and kissing him and everything like that, wouldn't you have at least enough compassion to have a talk with me? Would you just let it go and say, oh, that's Maharaj's pastime. He's kissing a dog. No, you'd probably put it on the internet and Facebook. And say, this sannyasi, he's just simply a rascal and you embarrass the hell out of me, so I have to change my... You go to the GBC, you go to Palatana Maharaj, who's our GBC sannyas minister, make a formal complaint, you know, the sannyasi, he's kissing a dog. He's traveling in his airplane with a little doggy bag. I think my godbrothers and yourselves and other people would help you, right?
But then, was there actually a change in his consciousness? Because previously, as Bhakti Maharaj, he was in that position where he didn't have the association with devotees.
Yeah, there was a change. As a deer, it was like he did hang out with devotees. You could see that. And as Jagbhart, it's not mentioned, but I assume that whenever there was a chance, he was associating with devotees. But his family was completely like Karmakanda Brahmanas. That's why he didn't associate. And then they were very cruel to him. You know, they put him out to be a scarecrow. I mean, what kind of family is that? They put the kid out to just scare away the birds. And then they give him to the dacoits to be offered to Bhadrakali. Anyway, so he was showing his fear of Maya. That's the point. If you're afraid of Maya, you always want to take the association of devotees, and you won't do things that may deviate you from Krishna consciousness. So any other questions or comments? Yes?
Just on the same point, Maharaj, the Jadavarata, we saw also see with Lord Rishabdev,
yeah,
similar mood. It seems like they're looking after their own spiritual protection, but their actions caused, you could say, a lot of offensive people were trying to watch out and doing all sorts of horrible things.
Yeah, I'm just...
So, how do we understand that? I mean, if they're very advanced in compassion, how would they, why would they act such a way that would cause people to offend them?
That's a very, very good question. Why would they act in such a way? Well, even with Prabhupada, you know, preaching Krishna consciousness, many people offended Prabhupada. And Prabhupada sometimes responded a little heavily, especially with some of his godbrothers. Because Krishna has some plans too, when the devotees, pure devotees like Jaffar and Srila Prabhupada understand the plan that, of Krishna, that certain people, they're meant to, let's say, commit offenses or send themselves to hell. I mean, even in Lord Chaitanya's pastimes, you know, they kept people out of the Shiva Sangam, right? And many people got offended and upset, and some of them even tried to create problems for Srivas Thakur by framing him, by making him seem that he was worshipping Durga. And these are part of the Lord's pastimes. Like, ourselves, we're not on that level of Jadbharat or Vrishabhadev, hopefully, because we're not incarnations of God. So we should be very careful about that. But whatever they do, they're doing under the full control of Krishna. That was the point I'm making. We're not. You know, I can't say that whatever I do, I'm not doing under the full control of Krishna. I wish I was. So it's a little bit different. So there's, what is it, anusar anukar. You follow in the footsteps of a great personality, but you don't imitate them. Does that make sense? Okay. One other quick question. Yes.
I've heard a rather compelling argument to the wearing of ISKCON traditional dress in preaching, is that it's just like a priest. If the priest is wearing the collar and the other attire, that person, people identify them as, oh, this is someone I can go to with spiritual or religious material. So that when devotees in their preaching programs, whether I'm not talking about them, they're at home, you know,
That's a very good point, and it depends upon the context. You know, if it has that effect, yes, certainly. But in other contexts, you know, contexts that I've been working in, that people may see us as, you know, something to avoid. I mean, let me give my own personal experience. This was in 1969, I think. I mean, whenever I saw, I hate to admit this, whenever I saw someone dressed in a dhoti, I just went the other direction. Because I just thought, this is weird, a man wearing a dress. I mean, that was just me. I'm not saying everybody thinks like that, or in every culture it thinks like that, but this is in America in the 1960s, you know, particular circumstance. So, one of the things that kept me from joining Krishna consciousness for about 2 years, even though I'd read the Bhagavad Gita, was the dress. You know, I first came in contact with Krishna consciousness in 69. First of all, I heard Prabhupada on the radio chanting Hare Krishna. And then I read the Bhagavad Gita, started chanting, following regulated principles. But I had certain encounters with devotees that were not too favorable. A number of them, I'm not going to go over them all because it's on the internet. You know, I talk about these things on the internet. And of course, one of the worst things is I got told by a devotee when I went to class, Bhagavatam class, that I was going to hell. I thought I was in a Christian church. And he told me, unless I surrendered to Krishna right away, I was going to be living underground, as short as a dwarf, eating human flesh, and had to join the Hare Krishna movement immediately today, or else it was all over. And so I said, I've just had an overdose of Krishna consciousness. So anyway, there were many external things that really didn't attract me. And the only reason I'm here today is because I met Prabhupada in 1971. And, you know, Prabhupada was dressed in a dhoti, obviously. And I was so overwhelmed with this sense of compassion and love and spiritual, and everything, that I said, I want to be like that. I don't care what I have to dress like. I don't care if I have to take all my hair off, because I mentioned to the devotees I look like Satchit Sai Baba before I joined the movement. I don't care. That's my role model. Prabhupada, you know, and that's why I'm here today. But otherwise, I mean, if the devotees had continued dealing with me the way people were dealing with me, because it was rather fanatic in those early days. I don't think I would be practicing Krishna consciousness at home. You know, I'd be a rich businessman and having my own temple on some island in the, like Hawaii or something like that. Enjoying life and surfing like that. So, you know, but it was Prabhupada's presence. So I'm just giving my own experience. It depends on the circumstance. Yes, in many circumstances, dressing like this will attract people, they're religious people. What I found at the university, at least the university we're dealing with, it doesn't really work like that. People are aware. We don't hide the fact. I mean, I don't hide the fact that they wear dhoti and everything like that. And at first I was thinking the people would be shocked when they find out who I actually was. But actually, there was no problem. Once they made friends and they knew that I was a normal person, that I didn't just escape from a mental institution, then...
And has that program been... I mean, I'm not being argumentative.
Yeah, yeah, no, that's all right. You can be argumentative.
No, I'm not. I'm just curious.
But it's fine.
I am argumentative, but not in this particular circumstances. Have you tried that program? Out of curiosity, have you tried that program in devotion?
Yes.
And it hasn't
been the same results, no. People tend to avoid something different. I mean, you're dealing with certain cultures, like in certain places in America, maybe even Australia, where if anything's different, they just tend to shy away. I don't know if it's that way here. It's not a comment about any situation here in Australia. If anything,
it was in those early days.
Yeah.
We were regarded as animals. Now I think
it's different.
People are more acceptable.
Yeah, so I'm not making a comment about it. All I'm saying is we dress whatever's most effective in preaching. That may be wearing a dhoti, or not for the ladies, of course, wearing a sari. Or it may be wearing. Normal Western clothes. It's just whatever's utility is the principle. That was the point. Whatever works to maximize our preaching, and that's really the point. I love dhotis. I'd rather wear a dhoti everywhere. I mean, it's nicer, it's cleaner. It's what Prabhupada taught us. But if I can make another 25, 30 devotees by not doing it, then that's what I'll do.
General devotees get confused with the concept of the Krishna West concept.
Yeah.
They kind of think, my experience, that they kind of think, oh, okay, so we don't have to wear saris, or we don't have to wear those because, you know, we're following the Krishna West thing. But they forget that actually there's the time, place, and circumstance that you're dressing in that particular way for that particular circumstance.
Yes.
And it's not that we can swan around the temple in, not properly...
Yeah, in shorts.
Tired, .
Yeah, that's a real big problem that arises. That, the Prabhupada said that we should dress, if we don't dress in dhotis or saris, we dress like gentlemen and ladies. But then what happens is the people think if they don't wear dhotis, then they can come in any sort of fashion to the temple, which is actually disrespectful to the deities. Mm-hmm. So the whole point... is to be respectful and clean. And so, as far as possible, a devotee should wear a traditional dress. But, at the same time as someone comes to the temple wearing... I mean, my experience is preaching in the outside, in temples, even Janmashtami, which we just had, 99.9% of the people came in Western clothes. And it's not that we had a changing room for everybody who came. Which would be impossible because we had 10,000 people come from Janmashtami. It's a lot of people, a lot of devotees required. We're sorry. So the emphasis should be on respectful dress. For us devotees, yes. I mean, for people who are initiated, obviously, you're in the temple where when you're giving Bhagavatam class, don't wear shorts or blue jeans or something like that, or Levi's. But whatever's best for preaching outside. I think utility is the principle. I mean, it's a basic point.
Thank you.
Okay, I think we have to end because we've really overstayed our welcome. Okay, all glories to His Divine Grace, Srila Prabhupada, Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai.